radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am not, but I only wish I was, Michael.
You are Paul Strolley.
I am in the flesh, as they say, with a face for radio.
There you go.
As
there
I've heard it told.
Paul. You know what? I want to thank somebody, our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services.
Yes.
Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
Our thanks also go out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. PerformingArtsLive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region. We are very grateful to them.
Indeed. And Paul, should we remind our listeners just one more time this week about the fact that the aftermath of destruction in Japan is far from over, and we urge everyone to assist in this worldwide concern by donating whatever you can. And to do so, please contact one of the following organizations. Red Cross, by going to their website, redcross.org, that's O-R-G, .org, worldvision.org/helpjapan, and the last site being disasterfunding.org. So whatever you can give, please do so for those unfortunate people that are
enduring that hardship there. And we have also put active links to all three of those sites on our website. So you can go to stateoftheartsla.com, that's stateoftheartsla.com, and click on the big banner with the Red Cross on it and give till it hurts, because these people really need our help. So
indeed.
Thanks for bringing that up.
So, Mr. Paul Strolley, how
yes.
was your week, sir?
It was good. It was good. Shall we tell them who we have here before we
I
go
think we
into
should.
This?
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
Okay.
I was excited to get to your story because I know it involves something close to your heart. Something,
yes. It oh. does. Close to my heart and very close to Jeremy Piven's heart, too. It's, it's a sushi story. It's almost my little homage to Japan. It's a sushi story I'm going to tell. But we have two. Michael, you know our guests very well. Do you know them better than me? Now, you've met. Who have you met before? I don't know
I
Michelle
met,
or Mackenzie.
No, I've not met either of them before. No. I've met Mackenzie's mother before.
Mm-hmm.
And
I met Mackenzie's father before.
There you go.
Yeah.
So 6 degrees right
yes.
there, right?
Oh, so Mackenzie Aston is with. Mackenzie, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having.
Good to see you.
And
Michelle Clooney is with us from Queer as Folk, who's yeah. looking lovely today.
Why,
beautiful.
Thank you.
Far prettier than you need to look for radio. I think I should stress
well,
that.
It's but always fun to look pretty.
I'm very grateful.
Because sometimes,
I'm very grateful.
Sometimes we get him in here with the sweats and the moo-moos.
Oh, I was in here with the sweats just the other day.
Oh, were you on Sheena's show?
I was. And I came in from the gym, and I felt bad. So I kind of thought maybe today I'd make up for it.
Oh, okay.
Well,
cancel out my karma,
did.
My sweat pant karma. I don't know.
We're glad you did with us. We appreciate it.
Okay, so before we get to them, should we talk about our week?
Yes, please.
So here's what happened to me.
Yeah.
Are either of you sushi fans?
I eat sushi 3 times a week.
Okay.
Wow.
So,
Mackenzie? A little bit less, but still a fan.
But still a fan. Okay.
So wait, when you say that, the raw stuff, right? That's what you eat?
Yeah. Tons of ginger and wasabi.
Uncooked, uncooked, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Full Monty.
There
yes,
you go.
Exactly.
All right.
So there's a sushi place my wife and I like to go to, Kushiyu in Tarzana. I just got $20 for saying that.
Salad.
squirrel. And I like the place very much, but it's a little on the pricey side. Monica and I will go, and it's very easy. It's very easy to break $100, even if we're sort of conservative and we have a little sake, which I've been known to seek some solace in the grape, as they say. So, we went to, but Monica had plans on Friday, so I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to this little sushi place across the street, because it's a little lower end, it's in a little strip mall. I'm like, I'll still get my Sushi Jones satiated, but I'll go to this cheaper place by myself. So I go in, and already they're a little touchy, because I'm by myself. I had come on the motorcycle, so I was all leathered out and everything. And they're just like, can we help you? That sort of like, you know, look. And I said, yeah, I want to have some sushi. And they said, okay, well, we're not like, just so you know, we're traditional, so you won't get any California rolls here. Apparently, my face screams California roll, which I don't understand at all. You won't get any California rolls here. You won't get any spicy tuna, because that's the other side is the tuna. And it's all traditional, and it's chef's choice. So you just basically sit at the sushi bar, and wow. you are presented with whatever the best market deal of the day is.
So the sushi which, Nazi.
That's exactly what Michael
exactly
said.
What said.
Exactly what Michael said. But I was all intrigued by this, because there's no sushi I don't like, so I couldn't fail. So I go in, and they bring it over, and the guy presents it to me, and he's like, this is black snapper, and there's you don't put soy sauce on this, and each one, and he just keeps bringing it, and he keeps bringing it, and he keeps bringing it.
Oh, boy.
And I keep eating it, and eating it.
Was it
and
good?
I should have had a beach ball balanced on my nose by the end of the thing. I was Shamu by the end of this thing. And then the bill comes. Now, it's just me. No alcohol, because I was on the motorcycle, and I don't cocktail when I'm on the two-wheeler. No alcohol, just myself, $120.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And it was not an expensive place. I mean, you look at the individual pieces, and it was just like, you know, $2, $3. And I just went, I ate about 6 pounds of fish in one sitting. And it was excellent.
It was excellent.
Though. It was excellent.
Now, where is this place?
It's directly, I don't even know. I have the business card, but I couldn't give them a plug right now. But it's in Tarzana. It's about 3 blocks west of Reseda and Ventura. But it was good. I enjoyed it. But I was feeling like Jeremy Piven by the end of it. But my mercury level is I could take my own temperature. That's how high my mercury level was.
I gotta be honest, my favorite part of that story was the expression Sushi Jones. Sounds like a
yes, Sushi Jones.
Character like that I would watch.
An indie rock band.
No, Sushi that's that's the black martial artist, Sushi Jones.
Sushi
yes.
Jones.
Great name.
Yeah.
So
that
you,
is a good.
You
if I ever have a daughter, I'm going to name her Sushi.
Sushi Jones.
Yeah. If I have a daughter, I'm going to name her Gonorrhea, just to keep the boys away from her. Well, yeah, that's my daughter Gonorrhea.
That's
so
one way.
Please stay away. What were you saying, Michael?
I said, and you had such an interesting and exciting evening dining like that, and I, you know, after the opening at the club last night,
yes.
I went to. Der Wiener Schnitzel. That's where I went.
Der Wiener Schnitzel?
Der Wiener Schnitzel.
You're not speaking in euphemisms, are you?
I didn't even know they had Der Wiener Schnitzels.
They do?
There's
one on Laurel Canyon.
The Wiener Schnitzel. The one with the hot dog?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The one with the hot dog.
It was the only place open on my way home. So
Do I love their food, but my coat has never been glossier. What are you eating that dog food for?
No. It really is. It's terrible.
Yes.
In all due respect to everyone who likes it, but not I. And I did five. They have a special $5 for 5 burgers.
Oh, wow. Did you do that?
I could have had 100 burgers.
I couldn't make up my mind because it's all junk, right?
Right,
so
sure.
I just said, okay, I'll have that for $5, and then I'll have the Polish sausage sandwich, and I'll have the Italian sausage sandwich.
Oof.
Oh, wow.
And didn't even really eat them to the extent of which I thought I might.
What's the difference between a Polish sausage sandwich and an Italian sausage sandwich? Aside from the fact that the Italian sausage sandwich is more intimidating.
Well, yeah. The Polish sausage might be a little healthier for you,
okay.
I think.
All right.
Possibly.
I have, now that you're talking about Polish sausage, can I throw in a story?
Yeah.
I've told this before, but we were talking about my being from Chicago and having lived in Chicago, and I got to tuck this in very, very quickly because I don't want to ignore our guests anymore. But I had never seen Polish sausage written as just the word Polish, which is what they do in Chicago. You have a hot dog or a Polish. But I had never seen it written singularly.
Oh boy.
So I go into a hot dog place. I'm in Chicago about 2 weeks, and I go in and I see it, and I think it says Polish.
Of course.
And I think that Polish is like another term for like the works.
Great.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I go in and I go, yeah, give me a foot long hot dog. And they, what do you want of that? And I'm like, Polish it up. Polish. And they're like, what? Oh. So yeah, just give me the Polish. Oh, it became Barney Fife. Like, yeah, Inch. Give me the Polish sandwich, Thelma Lou, get a Mount Pilot for a picture show. It's just like, and then in that moment it occurs to me, idiot, it's Polish sausage. Just like, just mustard, thanks. Sorry. Anyway, had to tuck that one in. Just embarrassing story.
But, you know, you think I would have come home with Italian food from the restaurant, right?
Exactly. You're at Vitello's. You're at a place with this incredible Italian food, and you stop at the Wiener Schnitzel?
Yeah. It didn't... something was wrong with me.
Oh.
I don't know.
It's a very strange choice.
I have a nightclub at Vitello's, the very famous restaurant, Vitello's. It's Sterling's upstairs at Vitello's.
Sterling's upstairs at Vitello's. Great little supper club in the Tahunga Village over there. It's very nice.
And we present the best of Broadway performers and concert and nightclub artists, and it's a wonderful place. And last night was just cooking. It was amazing. And I always bring home a little something healthy, actually, from there.
Yeah.
And I did not last night.
Yeah. So you stopped at Wiener Schnitzel.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
How do you feel today?
Not so good.
Not so good.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on with our guest.
Sorry.
I'm starting to get a little queasy. Our first guest not only won critical acclaim and a legion of loyal fans for her portrayal of the beautiful, intelligent, and very human Melanie Marcus on Showtime's groundbreaking hit series Queer as Folk, but she's currently wowing audiences in the Los Angeles premiere of Neil LaBute. I hope I got his name right.
Yes,
Neil
LaBute's
The Mercy Seat, a caustically funny examination of opportunism in the wake of tragedy. On stage at Hollywood's Inside at the Ford Theater, please welcome Miss Michelle Clooney. Wait a minute. There we go.
Thank you.
I can't read and operate a computer at the same time.
So. That's cute. Thank
you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to have you. Good to be here.
Very, very nice to have you here. And we understand the play is doing fantastic. It's doing good business and getting wonderful reviews out of the gate there.
Working for
a lovely theater company, VS Theater Company.
VS Theater, Johnny Clark and Ron Clyer and Andrew Carlberg is producing it. And Neil LaBute wrote it. So, you know, I'm a pretty happy girl.
Yeah, well, you should be. And the theater is something that you've done a lot of.
You know, I wouldn't say I've, well, you know, it's all relative, I guess. I was on stage when I was six. I was a dancer.
I know you got a...
And then I was in a ballet company. Yeah,
yes.
And then I met Milton Katselis when I was 19, and he took me under his wing, fortunately. I was like his daughter, the daughter he never had. And we worked extensively throughout my 20s, and he directed me more than any actress I think he ever worked with, actually. He directed me 7 or 8 times. And then I got Queer as Folk, and then I, you know, got lost in the TV world, which was really wonderful, and it was great to learn, you know, a different side of our craft, which it was, you know, a little different. And I did the vagina monologues throughout that and toured with them. And then after that ended, you know, I slowly went back to the theater. I went to the Eugene O'Neill Center back east and worked with Abby Spallin, and then I wrote my first play. And that was really fun. And the O'Neill Center was amazing. It has so much history, and you walk around and you feel all these people who have been there throughout the years. And then my agent sent me the script, and I think, you know, sometimes you get what you ask for. I've been really, in my heart of hearts, I was dying to be on stage, and that's why I wrote a play, tailor-made for how I see the world and myself. And I was about ready to move to New York, and then they sent me this script, and I was like, LaBute, oh, are you kidding me? I'm there. Yeah. And I met Ron and Johnny, and literally we sat down for coffee, and the first 5 minutes we slipped into rehearsal, and I started asking a billion questions about the situation, and they started talking about the material the way I like to talk about the material, and we just slipped into a rehearsal. And I said, I'm working with these guys. And we went after it, and what's great is that we all love to make the situation as real as possible, and while making the stakes as intense as possible. And we had such a great time working together. They're my two angels.
It's such an interesting premise. We promoed the show a few weeks ago.
Yes,
remember?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you, I think I did that promo, and you were saying, "Wow, what a."
It's a fascinating premise.
Very fascinating.
For those that didn't listen to that episode, that broadcast, Michelle, can you sort of give a little synopsis of the show for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. It takes place about 16 hours after 9/11 happened, and. I play Abby Prescott, and my lover, he's married, and I'm his mistress, and he, on his way to, he was supposed to be at the World Trade Center for our company that day. I'm his boss, his older 12-year, you know, 12 years his senior, his boss, and he decides to come over to my place, and we were fooling around, and 9/11 happens, and, you know, basically his family thinks that he's passed on, and he was in the Trade Center, and so... the play takes place where we're deciding, but you know, whether we're going to run away together
or if he's actually going to call his wife and tell her that he's alive and that he has a mistress. And it's beautiful. I think the only way you can play, the only way that you can get inside the characters is if you've ever thought about running away with someone, or if you can wrap your mind around that, mm-hmm. about, you know, giving up your entire life and right. Taking off. Going off the grid.
What was fascinating to me about that, when in you describing it just now, it just came back to me when Michael first described it, and that is that it's fascinating to me as a premise only because the idea of 9/11 being fodder for something other than a 9/11 story. I mean, it's almost a tool in this tale rather than the focus of the tale.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's really an interesting thing, and actually a very kind of oddly positive thing to come out of that there can be this creative, you know, out of such a tragic event, I have this little creative little gem of a play coming out of it. I think that's really interesting.
I think it's very smart, because I think I think Neil LaBute's known for his characters who can be selfish, yet incredibly human and flawed. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great that you have this, one of the greatest events in American history, a day that we'll never forget, and yet here are these two people grappling with and struggling and fighting with each other
right.
in such a caustic manner.
Oh, and his dialogue is just great.
Oh, it's sharp.
He's Butcher Boy, isn't he? Do you write Butcher Boy?
I don't think so.
I got to look that up.
He wrote Bash and Reasons to Be Pretty and The Shape of Things.
Okay, I'm thinking it's another Neil.
Company of Men.
That was Neil Simon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Butcher Boy, yes.
A little different.
Yes.
It did. A little darker.
Yeah. So when this when your show premiered in New York, which was in, I think, 2002, uh-huh. right? Sigourney uh-huh. Weaver played the role
yes.
that you're playing now,
yes.
and Liev Schreiber mm-hmm. played the role that Johnny is playing, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And it got, according to press materials here, it got some sensational reviews there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, it's a great play. I think it's one of Neil's strongest plays, personally. But I love the fact that, you know, most of his plays, the characters are just, it's just their first name, and it's kind of Anywhere USA. And this is a play where, they have last names. It's on a very specific day in a very specific city, and they are New Yorkers through and through. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no doubt about that. And it's a love story. You know, as horrible as these two people are to each other, it's, you know, in the words of Elizabeth Taylor, you only fight with someone you love.
And
she should know.
Evidently displayed in Virginia Woolf, right?
There are definitely, themes of that nature, yeah.
And it was written in 2002. I mean, mm-hmm. it premiered at Manhattan's Manhattan Class Company, New York's Manhattan Class Company, 2002. Mm-hmm. So it was really just very, very fresh. And I haven't heard of a production of it recently, locally. Has it been produced?
No, you know what happened? The Geffen Playhouse had the rights to it. I think it's interesting that the Geffen had the rights to it. I mean, I know they have that 99-seat theater, but it's a play that really needs to be done in an intimate setting, because right. the way that Ron directed us, and the way that the play should be done, and the way that Neil LaBute loves his plays to be done, are for them to be done in a 99-seat theater, and you should be looking through a keyhole, and right. you know, you should be right there in the middle of this uncomfortable situation that you feel like you really should be privy mm-hmm. to. So right. So it was great that Johnny had been fighting for the rights for 6 years, and he finally met someone who knew Neil, and Neil said, have him email me, and he wrote him this great letter and showed him all the reviews that they've gotten over the 10 years, and that they were named one of the top 10 theater companies in L.A., and he said, yeah, let me talk to the Geffen and grab the rights for you. I trust you guys. And he said, just don't fuck it up.
Yeah. No, you can do that. That's okay.
Can I say that?
She said the F word.
Yeah,
can I say that?
Yeah,
sorry.
You can, because it's internet radio.
Did. Okay.
I made the mistake of saying it once a few months back, and Michael was just like, oh, Paul, on Christmas.
it was around Christmas.
But actually, Neil did email me the other day, and he said, I've been hearing really good things, and he's had friends come. And
he emailed you to
and
say,
of course, I printed up that email, and it's now, you know, in
yes.
front of my desk.
Yes.
I'm not ashamed to say that.
Thanks for not fucking it up right over
there. Yeah,
exactly. Twice in one show. Okay.
Before we forget, I want to make sure that people know how to see this great show. Inside the Ford is located in the Ford Theaters complex at 2580 Cahuenga Boulevard East, Hollywood, California, just off the 101 Hollywood Freeway across from the Hollywood Bowl and south of Universal Studios. On-site, non-stacked parking is free. I got all that out with an on-site, non-stacked parking is free.
That's an important piece of information.
It is, because I've seen shows there before, and that's essential, because otherwise it's sort of like, you know, you got to lubricate your car to get it out of there. For reservations and information, call the Ford Theater box office at 323-461-3673. That's 323-461-3673, or go to www.fordtheaters.org. That's fordtheaters.org, and theaters is spelled R-E, not E-R. So
it's actually spelled R-E. Yes, you're right.
Yes. Did you question me on that?
For a moment, yes.
Normally, I just say it's Ford Theaters, and it's the affected spelling.
There you go.
So it's the quasi-British spelling.
One other thing we like to talk about at the Ford is that they have a night there where they offer pay-what-you-can tickets.
Yeah, that was actually... Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. That was actually Johnny's idea, and Andrew, our co-producer, because he wanted to just share theater with as many people in L.A.
It's a lovely
struggling
idea.
Artists and actors and people who love theater.
And people should take advantage of that when it's offered, and it is basically available for previews and all Wednesday evening performances when purchased at the door, subject to availability, of course. Mm-hmm. And the play is on stage through April 24th.
And Friday we have beer and pizza parties.
Wow.
Afterwards.
Really?
We just, you know, it's a celebration. Life is short, you know. Theater's great. We're doing
party
it.
Before the show? After the show?
Before the show.
Before the show.
And just out of curiosity, is it on-site, non-stacked pizza?
Yeah, I don't know what that means. All I know is the parking lot is huge. I get lost in the parking lot.
No, but non-stacked parking? Have you ever been in that situation?
I don't know.
Stacked parking.
Oh, like New York style? Like stacked cars?
No, just locked in. Like your car is blocked in by every
other
car.
But let me
car.
Just let
no
me just
lines,
say,
no, no
like,
lines.
Like the
no,
it's Greek
non,
theater.
It's non-stacked. We're going to talk more about the parking for this friggin' show than we're going to talk about the show.
The parking is so easy.
Right.
I don't want to scare you away with parking.
No, that's what we're actually pitching the parking.
But I don't even understand what that means. That frightens me, stacked.
Come see the next show at Inside the Ford, non-stacked. The touching true story of a woman who doesn't get implants.
Starring Sushi Jones.
Yes, starring Sushi Jones as the non-stacked vixen. Yes.
So, Michelle, I have a question.
Thanks for the callback, because we appreciate that.
That was good.
That's well done.
Good.
Very nice.
That's well done.
McKinsey.
Michelle, you've done a lot of television.
Mm-hmm.
And by comparison, do you have a preference? I mean, Queer as Folk was an amazing series.
Look, if it's Queer as Folk, that's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, look, as long as it's great people and it's a great script, I love everything. I love theater, film, TV. Theater's especially fun because it's live. And mm-hmm. the price you pay is that before I go out, I'm like... trying to breathe, and I'm like, opening night, literally I was shaking, crying, I couldn't breathe, and I'm like, this is perfect for my state before I walk into the door. This is perfect. Right. I can use this, you know, this is what I've been looking for. So you know, once I get on stage, I'm fine, but it's so exciting. I love it. But look, TV's great too, and film they're just different
but it's that
sort of intensity.
That energy, you know, because we were talking before we went on the air, I was talking about doing the live show. 1,400 performances I did.
That's
and
incredible.
It just got like that before everyone.
Did you ever
want? Because
I get like that every night.
Yeah.
I get every single performance and if I'm not like that, I get scared because I don't
want to
give them something flat. I want to give them everything I have.
And you know what works for that? Bourbon. Helped me.
I've
really.
Tried everything.
Yeah, Knob Creek really takes care of it.
Oh,
try it, listeners. Try it.
don't please. Don't.
You have something coming out, right? Queens of the World, is that coming?
No,
out?
We haven't started shooting that yet.
Oh, okay,
and,
but that's coming up on your schedule.
It was
right?
postponed, but it looks like it's going to be happening in 6 months. And I think that's everything I have on the books right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, we hope this play continues to run and run and run.
And as a reminder, I'm sorry, Michael, did I interrupt you?
Not at all.
As a reminder, that play is The Mercy Seat, and it is at Inside the Ford for tickets, the box office, 323-461-3673, 323-461-3673, or fordtheaters.org. And how is theater spelled on there?
And that would be spelled with an R-E.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Okay. Just checking up on that.
Shall we do our arts calendar,
I think
Michael?
We must.
And pay the bills with that and then talk to our next guest. But, Michelle, please stick around and chime in.
I will. Thank you.
Because you've upped the visual quality of this studio significantly.
I don't know. Mackenzie's pretty hot over here.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. No. But I tell you, Mackenzie, the slinky number on you doesn't work so well. Oh. The red, you know.
Don't knock it till you try it.
And if you're gonna wear, and if you're gonna wear something that low cut, wax. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
believe
understood,
me.
Understood.
Believe me.
I left the house late. It's my
Michael's like, believe me, Paul knows. What are you saying?
I'm just chiming in.
Are you saying that I need to wax myself? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
I feel like, are you guys talking about my dress because it's so low cut?
No, this is low cut. What? That's fine. I hadn't noticed, actually.
It's ridiculously low cut. I know.
Sorry, I hadn't noticed.
I feel a little J-Lo here.
It's okay.
I was going to
We're not complaining.
I was going to wax my back if only to execute the tattoo that I want to get, which I don't really have the balls to do, but I did want to get a tattoo up my back of my height at different ages. It's like a door jam.
Fantastic.
Like Paul at 18, but never pulled the trigger on that. Okay, Arts Calendar. Our first guest, not only one... Oh, no, that's the introduction. Back to the Arts Calendar. Sorry. When a Broadway musical is in its out-of-town tryout, well, sometimes it's murder. Never fear, Boston's finest detective and a die-hard musical theater fan himself is on the case. And between The Showstoppers by John Kander and Fred Ebb and The Heartstoppers provided by Rupert Holmes and Peter Stone, all will be hilariously revealed. Performance Riverside at the Landis Performing Arts Center in Riverside, California presents the hilarious Broadway smash hit Curtains, April 1st through April 10th.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like if your iPod could produce live music?
Yes.
Now it can.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that a question?
Yeah, it was. Okay. But now it can, Paul. Join the premier ensemble of the National Children's Chorus in a unique music experience where you, the audience, with the help of the maestro's MacBook Pro, will click your way to the most eclectic mix of live music you've ever heard. From the Beatles to Mozart, at Shuffle, you never know what you're going to get or in what order, and neither will the event singers. So don't miss an exhilarating concert experience in the intimate setting of the 82nd Space at the Broad Stage in Santa Monica, California, this Saturday only, April 3rd, for 3 performances.
That sounds really fascinating.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wonderful for kids. Huh?
That does. That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
For more information about the events in our arts calendar, you can visit either stateoftheartsla.com, that's stateoftheartsla.com, or performingartslive.com, where you can also check out what's happening in Southern California every day of the week.
Indeed.
Yes.
All right.
All right. So who do we got next?
We do have someone very special in the studio with us. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, has been working professionally almost all of his young life. Television audiences will remember him from his 3-year stint on the popular NBC sitcom, The Facts of Life. And like our guest, Michelle Clooney, he too is currently on the board, starring in the world premiere of David L. Ray's Caught at Hollywood's Zephyr Theater. Caught centers around the upcoming wedding of a committed gay couple living in Los Angeles and explores the meaning of marriage and how the family can find a way to meet in the middle while navigating long-standing religious values and staying true to each's core beliefs. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mackenzie Astin.
Thank you. Thank you.
Don't you love that guillotine cut off? No,
it's
with
it? It's just right.
Mackenzie, actually, before we, I want to chat with you about something. I want to tell you something that was really important to me. It's kind of a small world situation here because Michelle did the Queer as Folk with a great friend of ours and Michael's of mine who did the show, a funny actor named Scott Lowell. Mm-hmm. And while I was doing a show with Scott Lowell in Chicago in the early 90s, I had the pleasure of meeting your father, John Astin, who was doing a show. We were doing Laughter on the 23rd Floor, and he was doing Lend Me a Tenor just a few blocks south. And just what a class act.
He is.
A gentleman, just very, very kind, very, very encouraging for young actors, and just really, really treasured meeting him. He's a fine man.
He is. He's just that. He's the Buddha. I call him the Buddha. He's an amazing fellow, and at just about 81 years old is still working harder than all of us put together, teaching at Johns Hopkins University, running the program in theater arts and studies, which is spelled R-E.
And you recently worked with him there too, right?
I did, yeah. I left Los Angeles to go to a wedding in October of 2005. The wedding was in Birmingham, Alabama, and I figured I was almost to Baltimore, so why not go visit Pop? And I fell in love with it. I thought I would stay the weekend. I ended up staying 5 years.
Holy cow.
Which was terrific, because it really helped sort of reestablish a relationship for us, for he and I, as adults. And if I could gesticulate, I would use finger quotes, because I'm still acting like a child most of the time.
Just make sure the duct tape doesn't come off. Just keep those hands at your sides.
Fair enough. But I fell in love with Baltimore, and I fell in love with the theater program that he was that he runs there, and it really, truthfully, it helped me reestablish a passion for acting as a craft. I'd gotten sort of run down with not getting work out here in Los Angeles, looking for work mostly in television, and it was getting me down. So the 5 years I spent there really reignited the passion.
So not only reignite it, but to reignite it with your father, and you know that that says it right there. I mean, if you can work with your father and enjoy the process for 5 years, because I worked with my father one summer. And
I tell you what,
he's under the car, and I'm looking at that Jack going college or prison. You know,
just in all honesty, the first four years were sunshine and kittens and bubbles. I was just driving him to school and bringing him lunch and stage managing a couple of shows and helping hang lights and stuff like that. And then the last year that I was there, I performed as an actor in a show that a student had written, a wonderful show. Where I played the lead, and I was on stage for 131 pages, even through intermission. Wow. And Dad directed it, and it was a study in tension. I mean, I reverted, you know, to a previous lifetime. I was acting so childish, and he, you know, God bless him, he was a patient man with me, because I threw tantrum after tantrum. We were advertising the show on a local TV station, and they asked how it was going, and I said, well, this is terrible of me. I said, well, not only is he telling me how to live my life off stage, but now he's getting to tell me how to live my life. On stage, it was rough. So I know what you mean about the Jack in the car and the.
How old were you at the time?
36. it was not good. There was some powerful dynamics taking place there, but thankfully we got through the show, and it was well received, and we're still friends.
When I ask you how old you were, would you just answer that again?
Absolutely.
For me? So how old were you at the time?
36.
Sorry.
No, he is truly a patient and encouraging man, and put up with a lot from his baby boy.
And Michael, now you know Mackenzie's mom.
Well, yes, I had the pleasure of making her acquaintance and having a bit of a relationship with her when she was on the Patty Duke show, or as a result of the Patty Duke show, I should say, because my friend Diane Foster was Kathy on that show,
Fantastic. It's always been such an interesting angle, for lack of a better word, to me. You know, what went on in that lady's life where she was constantly looking at Patty Duke, acting towards her, but in different characters.
Exactly.
Know? Oh, this was the reverse angle?
Yeah, yes, the lady you would, you know, the over the shoulder that you would see of either Patty or Kathy, you know, the cousin who wasn't speaking. What a wild and interesting perspective she must have had.
Exactly. Hmm. And so through that, I met your mom, and during that time, which was in the late 60s, mm-hmm. and we had this very special relationship, and it was a lot of kind of you know, kind of listening to one another and what she was going through, and she had some rough things that she was going through with management and agents and so forth at the time. But what a lovely experience that was in my life, and then to see her as an adult in more recent years, to see her on stage in Follies here in Los Angeles,
which was an
all-star cast.
Great time doing that show.
Yeah, she was very good in it. She really should do more.
She'd love to.
Theater.
I tell you, she would absolutely love to. She's directing The Miracle Worker up in Spokane.
Wow.
Which is really exciting, because that's been a part of her life since she was a wee one.
Of course.
And now to be in the director's chair as opposed to on stage or on camera with it is really exciting for her. And I'll be honest, I tell you, I'm sure somewhere in there she's thinking, man, I wish I could be back up on stage doing that same thing again.
Well, she probably could, couldn't she?
Yeah, I think she probably could.
She lives in Idaho still?
Yeah, Northern Idaho, Coeur d'Alene, way up there in the panhandle.
Yeah.
Which is right by where my stepdad is from, and she and he skedaddled from Southern California back in the late 80s, and have made a nice place for themselves up there. And she comes down to work on occasion, not as much as she would like to, but that's the way this business does it.
Yeah. You know?
Well, speaking of this business, if I could speaking of this business, let's talk about you in this business and this production of Caught.
What an interesting premise. Another interesting premise. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Paul.
At the Zephyr Theater, I'll actually ask Mackenzie to fill me in on that, but I just want to say I did my show at the Zephyr briefly, and I love that little venue because there's a lot of great little 99 seaters in town. But the great thing about the Zephyr is that it's wide, and I don't think there's more. I don't think it's more than three rows deep.
No, it's only three. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it's a thrust. Deep.
Yeah.
You know, and I just love that little space. Are Gary and his wife still in the neighboring place, the Neon Store? Is that still there?
I don't know.
I don't know if it is.
I don't know either.
I don't know if it is either. But
I'll leave the stage and start yelling Gary.
Just go up. Just scream Gary. Yeah, yeah. And it's good if you push a shopping cart while you say it.
Perfect.
It really gets more attention.
I've got one in the mini.
So, Mackenzie, like Michelle did, can you give the listener sort of a synopsis of what Caught is about?
Absolutely. It takes place in 2008 when gay marriage was legal in California still, and it is about a week before Troy and Kenneth, the character I'm playing, are to be wed. And it starts out, everything is very blissful and wonderful, and then Kenneth's sister, Darlene, phones in, leaves a message, and says that she needs to come to visit right away. And immediately the hairs on Kenneth's neck go up because he's been honest with his sister, but he hasn't really lived the out life in front of her. And it's the weekend of his wedding, so both Kenneth, the character I'm playing, and Troy, his partner, are curious as to why she's suddenly coming out. And giving too much away, it turns out it's not exactly what they think. She's got some stuff that she's dealing with. And what's lovely about the play, in the experience that I've had, is that it is remarkably realistic and true to family life, wherein people aren't always as forthright as they need to be until it gets to a certain point of critical mass where things are just about ugly, and then all the truth comes out. And in that truth, for all of the characters within the play, there is redemption. That's the really beautiful thing about it to me. This play doesn't hammer anybody over the head with a different perspective, you know, or try to change people's, like you said in the synopsis, the core beliefs.
No political agenda to it, just
not necessarily. You know, yeah. I mean, it really is about love, about families learning to love one another for whom one another is. Or are, and it does so in such a wonderful, wonderful way in this play. David L. Rey wrote an amazing, amazing play, and I think the fact that the theater is full nearly every night, and that we've been extended the number of times we've been extended is testament to that. And so it's wonderful in the Zephyr Theater as well because it's so intimate. It really feels as though you're in Troy and Kenneth's living room, and a lot of stuff gets played out there. And assuredly, everybody leaves the theater with a lot of love, a lot more love, I feel, than they came in with.
And understanding, I hope. As
absolutely,
well.
Yeah. I mean, it's really. I think the fundamental message of the thing is that people need to work with one another to meet in the middle, because we're all in this together. I mean, in the big mm-hmm. picture, we are all in this together, and without hammering it over people's heads, it really gives you this this wonderful feeling. And you know, people take that feeling and leave the theater and go spread it around wherever they head. And it's been really fortunate for me to work on it.
And that's the best stuff to see out here. I mean, you're echoing a point that Michelle made earlier, which is, you know, it sounds like with both of these productions, the venue is as important as is another character in the play. You know, that the intimacy of it. They're both very intimate stories, you know, it just sounds like you'd get so much more out of this. I remember seeing Doubt at the Amundsen. Oof. And that was just, phenomenal acting, but really a disappointing theatrical experience because Doubt should not be played at the Amundsen. Mm-hmm. You know, it was sort of like, and now here's Doubt as performed by small claymation figures. You know, that was basically, I was waiting. There's always tomorrow. I was waiting for that. So, so people need to be reminded of this, these intimate theaters that we have. We have a lot of these storefronts in L.A. that have these,
beautiful,
these really
beautiful theaters.
Vital, vibrant shows going on, mm-hmm. and you're 8 feet away. Yeah. And I think that's something that we really need to applaud and encourage.
Theater in general, I think, especially in this town, is really nice for people to experience, I feel, because television is such a big part of the industry in this city that for people to be able to go see something where there aren't any commercials and they don't have a remote where they can go back and see what happens, it really puts people on the edge of their seats, where you get to be taken along on a journey that lasts an hour and 45 or a couple hours, and it's just a much different experience in terms of the energy in the room. It's really a good idea,
and it's important to do too, because the younger audience, I mean the median age of a theater goer now is so much older. That are you seeing younger people in your audiences?
I've seen a lot of younger people, and I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know who's invited.
They love Stack Parking. Young people love Stack Parking.
No, they're coming out and they're supporting us, and they love it. Yeah. They love it. It's fantastic.
What about your audiences?
Young and old. It's interesting. There's a lot of families that have been coming. A lot of
because you're right on Melrose there.
A lot of couples bringing their parents. I replaced an actor named Corey Brill who went on to another production, and so I had the opportunity to see the show as an audience member a half dozen times or so. And at one of the performances, I overheard during intermission a conversation going on between. I guess it was a lesbian couple, and one of the gals had brought her mother and father, and they were having a very serious philosophical discussion about fundamentalist Christianity and how it plays into homosexuality, and what seemed to be happening was a better understanding between the parents and kids about a lifestyle that was different than the parents were accustomed to. And so it's all age ranges. We've had some codgers and some toddlers.
Codgers and toddlers?
Did I just
codgers.
Say that?
Yeah.
Starring Sushi Jones.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the next band. Ladies and gentlemen, codgers and toddlers, 5, 6, 7. Wait a minute. Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Coming up.
Go ahead.
Codgers and toddlers.
He lives for those sound bites.
I only have 5 sound bites. I'm going to use them.
But you use them well.
Michael, would you please share the information
yes,
for
indeed.
People can go see Caught the Play?
Well, it's just gotten extended again through
May 15th as of now, but we're gonna keep on trucking.
It is an Ovation recommended production, ladies and gentlemen, which is very distinguished from the LA Stage Alliance to get that kind of recognition. So it's important that you think about going to see this play, which plays on Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 7 p.m. and tickets are available by visiting caughttheplay.com or by calling 800-595-4849. The Zephyr Theater, as Paul said earlier, is located at 7456 Melrose Avenue in Los Angeles.
Directly across from Johnny Rockets, if I remember correctly.
There you
is
go.
It Johnny Rockets across the way?
It's across the way a little
great
bit.
Great tuna melts.
At the
great
Johnny Rockets.
It's no wiener schnitzel, but it's a good tuna melt. You know, it's good, it's tasty, and you lose a couple of pounds.
in the process.
Yes. There you go.
Well, that sounds like definitely we have to go see both those shows.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah,
I'm
definitely.
Going to go Most see Caught, sure. actually.
You got to do it.
I am.
Yeah. yeah.
Can you?
I'm
going
to get myself
well, yeah.
up to
when
that.
When do you play? Is it you get yourself right up. When is it?
Friday, Saturday, Sundays, 8 o'clock, and 7 o'clock.
Oh, so you can come see me Wednesday or Thursday, and then I'll come see you Sunday at 8.
That's perfect.
That sounds
Sunday,
good.
Sunday at 7. Sunday,
Sunday
at 7. Sunday
at 7. I am. Yeah. I really want to
stay till
8. Sounds great.
The show runs that long.
Why not? Stick around.
You know, you said something. I just want to bring this up because it's interesting. I don't know whether you've experienced this with your audiences or not, but we had two of the stars of Beverly Hills 90210 as guests not too long ago. Two of the young stars. Wonderful, wonderful people. Wonderful young people. And they were both doing a play together at the Stella Adler, which is also another great
mm-hmm.
theater
That's
in town.
That's great.
And Ryan Eggold is and Jillian Zinter. That's who was on the show here. And Ryan had written this play. And it was I went to see it to review it, and it was a wonderful production, a wonderful evening, excepting one fact.
which was very important to me. It was very young.
Waiting for the shoe to drop.
Skewed very young. The audience skewed very young, as expected, if you know these two young stars from Beverly Hills 902 were. But there was a blue hue in the audience throughout the entire performance, which was the fact that caused by the fact that everyone was on their cell phones.
Yes.
No.
Get out.
Well, that, and it was a huge show. Well, that, and it was a huge show with Smurfs. But aside from that,
no, seriously, and it was
this is real? They really were?
Really were. And I mean, we're talking adults as well as the younger ones. And the man sitting next to me literally texted for the entire show.
Shame, shame.
Oh, that's incredible.
Michael, without naming any names, and I know you can't, but you get a lot of performers in the club at Sterling's upstairs.
Yes.
Michael told me a story where the performer who was on stage, their manager, who was in the seat, like right on the edge of the stage, like the front row seat, texting.
Yeah.
And do they
never
think?
Looking up at the
never looking up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that blue
shameful.
Yeah.
That blue hue in the room. So I wondered if that's happened to you.
It's not even
at
being
all.
A person of a theater, it's just kind of being a person with common sense and etiquette. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, that happened. That happened.
I might jump off the stage and grab their cell phone. Just joking.
Sunday night, show. There was a scene towards in the second act, towards the end of the show, and someone's cell phone. I guess the text indicator was a doorbell. And so, you know, Deborah Puett and I are in the middle of a lovely little moment, and ding dong. Ding dong. And I thought it was the stage. I thought the stage manager, you know, dropped a Snickers or something onto a button that was bringing the sound effect. But it was somebody's cell phone.
Did you go to the door?
No. I refused to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful, too, because whomever it was, I'm sure, feels a bit like a schmuck.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, you know, Patti LuPone did that recently in a performance of Broadway. Yeah. Gypsy stopped the show.
Yeah. Good for her.
She actually stopped the show.
Stopped the show.
Yeah. It's a famous.
But she probably did it in such a funny way. She's such a great funny lady.
No,
it wasn't funny.
No.
YouTube
it. And just YouTube Patti LuPone Gypsy stopping show. She rips them.
Wait, how did it get on YouTube? So somebody was using their
audience?
Phone.
just the audio.
Yeah.
Just the audio.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it turns out, and Jim O'Hare, our friend Jim O'Hare, who's currently on Parks and Recreation,
yes.
who was a guest on the show, he was sharing that story. And the other guests we have, whose name escapes me now, but they said that it turns out she was yelling at it wasn't a cell phone, it was a photographer.
Yeah, but she was yelling at her photographer.
And turns out she was yelling at her own
She didn't even know it.
And he
was
the one that had the cell phone. But speaking of theatrical disasters, this brings us to we got about five. You like that segue?
Yeah, I love that segue.
Watch me work, Sterling.
Michelle,
every
Mackenzie, you go first.
You want me to go first?
Please do.
Yeah,
okay.
All right.
For those that don't know, for the listeners that don't know, we always ask our guests to tell a tale involving an embarrassing episode that happened to them either on stage or on camera or something. So Mackenzie, please,
a little initiation.
Take it.
It was a dark and stormy Friday night. The first act had just begun.
Well, sorry, we're out of time.
I didn't set the champagne flute down cleanly enough when I jumped to go answer the door, and so my back was turned to the audience, and I heard, and then the broken glass. The other character came running in, and his line is supposed to be, "It's official, I'm ordained," and what he said was, "It's official, your house is a mess." And I stood there frozen, watching the two other actors vamp and fill time and clean up the mess that I had just made, because I didn't know what to do. And then I remembered that if I break a glass, I go clean it up, so I helped clean it up, and we got back into the dialogue, and it was okay. But for a few moments there, I was frozen.
But it's always a glass, isn't it? You couldn't drop like a shoe. It always has to be something that will damage other actors.
Crash.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was. I got another story, but it takes about 45 minutes to tell. So I'm not.
Well, that's another show. You'll have to come back. Yeah.
So Michelle, what's yours?
I'm trying to think of one. I mean, I have several. Well, I don't have several. But I have one that jumps out at me. I was in San Francisco doing the Vagina Monologues with Barbara Rush and this wonderful, wonderful comic who I cannot remember her name. She'll probably come and haunt me down. But if I seem emotionally hungover, it's because I just did five shows. And this show, let me tell you, I run the gamut. So Monday mornings I wake up and I feel like I went through, you know, I've been through the ringer. So,
well, thank you for.
I just wanted to say that at the end.
But seriously, thank you for telling us that.
Yeah,
now.
Really, exactly. No, so anyway, so I'm in San Francisco and I'm.
What
doing,
a help to sit for.
Fucking sorry. So I'm in the vagina monologues, and I'm in the center of the stage, and I'm doing that great monologue that she wrote. It starts with a C and it ends in a T, and it's four letters, right? Have you guys seen the show?
Yes. I love ventriloquism.
So I'm doing that monologue, and I come to the part where I'm screaming this word that a lot of people feel is very vulgar, and I think we all know what the word is now. And I'm screaming the word, and they sat my parents. You know, there's like out of 800 seats, they sit my parents literally right in my eye line.
No.
So I'm sitting there getting in touch with my female self, you know, I'm kind of in touch with myself today too. But I'm sitting there getting in touch with myself, and I'm screaming at the top of my lungs the most vulgar word you can imagine, doing it in all different sorts of ways, and it ends in an orgasm. And I see my father. Looking at me, and he's laughing hysterically, and my mother next to him, her face is in complete shock.
Yeah.
And I forgot to tell them about that part of the show, you know, and you know, they've seen me do everything on stage, so I'm sure it wasn't crazy, but it was just a moment. It was a moment I'll never forget that's frozen in time for all.
It's one of the few words Paul hasn't said yet.
Hey.
Notice how I danced around it.
You just. And we appreciate that.
I've been racking my brain to think of all the other words that you can spell besides that one. We start with a C.
Exactly.
Chat. We've got.
Yes.
Oh, there's another one.
I scream chat.
Oh, right. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, go and see Michelle Clooney in the Mercy Seat. And that is running through April 24th inside at the Ford Theater in the Hollywood Hills, and also Mackenzie Astin in Cot, which is at the Zephyr Theater, now extended through May 15th. On the weekends, Zephyr Theater in Hollywood.
And Michael, please tell them who's going to join us next week. Who do we have? Do we have David Engel?
We do.
Yes.
And from the Great White Way, both of our guests, Mr. David Engel from the original companies of Les Cons aux Folles and Off-Broadway's Forever Plaid.
We'll also be talking to Larry Rabin, who not only replaced Matthew Broderick as Leo Bloom in the Broadway production of The Producers, but co-starred in the Las Vegas production of the show. Both Mr. Rabin and David Engel will co-star in our own Cabrillo Music Theater's production of The Producers at the beautiful 1,800-seat Fred Kavli Theater, located at Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza in Thousand Oaks, California. Mackenzie, Michelle, this was a joy having you guys in.
Indeed.
Was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Very grateful to have you, and we will see you all next week.
See you on the radio.
Hey. Aloha.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.